good evening. Welcome to Recovery Internet Radio. You're joining us here tonight. Thank you very much for episode number 75. My goodness gracious. What a milestone. Yeah. We're in our second year, so we appreciate your support, and we hope we bring you a good message here. So we're broadcasting live and direct from Straight Stuff Studios, enjoying a beautiful weekend at the end of the summer here. Let's see. We've got a couple of friends, and I don't want to call them sponsors because we don't take the cash, but we'd like to share the love.
We
could set up a way for you to donate if you'd like, but no, we're fine. I'd like to mention a program that we're pretty seriously involved in, kind of up and off the ground and running now. It's called Sidekicks Mentoring. It's a youth mentoring program for maybe some youth that are a little bit more at risk and maybe have had some troubles in the past are trying to be on the straight and narrow. So we try to set them up with people that have had similar life experiences, positive role models, people that have been there and done that and are motivated to give back. So it's a great program. We're not your big brother, big sister, but, we're a little bit more intense.
And it's there's no money involved?
No money involved. No, we work with several different agencies, and we've got some great mentors, and it's a no-cross program. Get a hold of us. Check us out. We're on the web at sidekicksmentoring.org. So we got our phone number on there, all that good stuff. So check it out. Let's see. What else do we got? Oh, Double Take. Double Take the band. Bob Harper.
Mm-hmm.
You guys went and saw them.
Harper.
10 Gallon. How was the show? You went just a couple weekends ago.
It was fun. Yeah,
fantastic.
We had a guest.
Excellent.
Thing too.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey.
Big band.
So you never know. Special guest stars.
Special
hey.
Guest stars.
How about that?
Sure.
They do. They do cover music from 50, 60, 70, all the way to today. It almost sounds like Star 105.5.
Their
logo, motto, whatever it is.
Right.
They're a lot of fun though. Check out their website. It's doubletakechicago.com.
Yeah.
And I think, if you forget to turn your speakers down on your computer, it automatically starts playing Brick House right away. So
yeah.
Be ready for that. Yeah.
Brick
House. So, yeah, check out our friends. Check out Sidekicks Mentoring if someone is in need of that kind of service. And check out DoubleTakeChicago.com. That's all I got. Mr. Okay. I'd like to introduce our host, of course, tonight, Mr. Rick Atwater. Man who needs no introduction.
A man who needs no introduction except for tonight.
Occasion.
Anyway, welcome to Recovery Internet Radio and our show, Straight Stuff on Addictions. Our tag tonight is losing the 10-year fight ends in a big win. And
how'd you like that title? I didn't ask you.
I guess we'll go.
Okay, at this point.
It's out there.
It's a little late. We Anyway, thanks for joining us tonight where we are every Sunday night at 8 o'clock. And thanks to Chris, our engineer, and Karen, our guest. You can call into the show for questions, comments, or whatever other reason you feel like it at 323-792-2977. That's 323-792-2977. Call us if you would like. We'd love to hear from you. Or you can tweet us live at Rick Atwater, and that would get you live tweet into the show, and you can ask a question if you wish. Also, remember to check out recoveryinternetradio.com. That is
recoveryinternetradio.com.
There is. We're going to try to get 6 of those in tonight. A little promotion. Anyway, you can go to recoveryinternetradio.com for all of our archive shows. So all of those 75 shows are available for you.
Yeah.
And you can also listen live at recoveryinternetradio.com if you tune in to the website at the time we're broadcasting.
You certainly can. And as Rick mentioned, it's recoveryinternetradio.com. there's just a little button that says listen live. And as long as you're at the right time, you can listen to us right now. And feel free to give us a call at that number. We can take calls, Or like Rick said, all our shows are archived too. So if now is not a convenient time for you, feel free to listen to it from the website, download it to your computer, subscribe to the RSS feed, get it on your iPhone or iPad. We're all over.
We're all over the place.
Yeah.
One of my friends listens to it on his cell phone when he's traveling.
Sure.
And then makes fun of me later, but it's but that's how he listens to it. And so and just a mention, one of our regular studio audience people is not here tonight, and he's the one that always does the voice imitations, you know, for us. But he's not here tonight. Anyway, that's Dr. Tom Franz. He's a chiropractor. So, but he's really, even though he does really good voices, he's even a better chiropractor. So if you need chiropractic care in our area, call Dr. Tom Franz at Franz Chiropractic at 815-444-9466. And we miss you tonight, Tom, but you're probably working. So, okay, so I think we'll get started with tonight's show. And nice to have you with us tonight, Karen.
Thank you. I appreciate your asking.
Thank you for coming. I guess I'd like to start by asking you to maybe tell us a little bit about how you came up, how you grew up, a little bit about your family.
Oh, okay. Our whole family is from Washington, D.C., and just grew up in a family. Drinking was all over the place, right? Both parents, grandparents, it was just understood. I thought all families were like that. And just didn't know any other way. And there was never any question for me that I wouldn't drink someday. And I noticed my dad was kind of a quiet guy. But when he drank, he got more talkative and relaxed. Mm-hmm. And my mom was kind of uptight. And when she drank, she was a happy drunk. So it was kind of a good thing, I thought, when they drank. It seemed to be. So
did it get to, I mean, did you ever, looking back on it now, I mean, the picture is different when you look back, but looking back on it now, did it ever occur to you that the drinking in your family was a problem?
Well, neither of my grandmothers drank, and my one grandmother, we lived with my mother's parents, and
grandma didn't
drink, and
that would be called a teetotaler in the day.
But she was always just praying for everyone to please stop drinking, and asking us to help her pray to St. Jude, patron saint of hopeless cases. And
isn't he the guy you bury upside down in the front yard when you want
Saint
to sell
Joseph.
Oh, that's
Saint
Joseph.
Joseph.
I get him mixed up. Okay, so St. Jude.
I just thought, you know, she just was taking all the fun out of everything. You know, everybody was having a good time. Except, you know, as a kid, my grandfather had a very responsible job with the Treasury Department. But he would come home, dinner must be on the table at 6 o'clock, and then he would get roaring drunk. Roaring drunk every night, and he was abusive too to my grandmother. So
I always liked that phrase, roaring drunk, for some reason. When somebody gets roaring drunk, do they actually roar?
Yes, he did. Yeah, he did. He actually did. And he drank Red Bull rum. I'll never forget it.
Red
Bull rum.
Almost goes with a roar. Yeah.
But anyway, he was a real nasty drunk. Mm. And the other grandfather, on Sundays, we'd walk to my dad's parents' house. And that was where everybody had Sunday dinner, and the two grandfathers didn't get along, but they would drink. And I have a really cool picture of them, just shoulder to shoulder, scowling at each other. And, of course, They're both drunk, but anyway, that was it. Yeah. That's life. Isn't everybody's life like that?
Right. And so, like, how old were you when you kind of caught on that things were a little different maybe in your family? Were you already out of the house or was it, you know?
Well, we moved, my parents moved my sister and I have one sister, 4 years younger than I, and we moved to the Chicago area when I was 7, and mom and dad, you know, there was no such thing as a babysitter, and they just took us everywhere. I slept in booths in beer joints and pool halls and stuff like that. I mean, that was natural. That's what we did, and we went everywhere with them, and drinking was always involved.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah. So, so would you say that you were predisposed? Would you use that word? What word would you use?
I think I was born an alcoholic. When I got sober years later, as I'm wrestling with, you know, am I an alcoholic? Aren't I an alcoholic? You know, why am I an alcoholic? I just have come to the conclusion that I am, and it doesn't matter. The why doesn't matter. What does matter is that I know that I'm an alcoholic, and I know what to do about it.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's, you know, recovery. And I... Mm-hmm. Can I say AA?
Yeah, absolutely.
That's where I found recovery.
Yeah.
Years later, though.
Okay, so I've heard people say, I was born an alcoholic. Mm-hmm. So tell me what that means from your frame of reference. What does that mean? Does that mean the first time you ever took a drink, you went south? Or does that mean mentally? Or does that mean genetically? What do you mean?
You said, you know, looking back.
Yeah.
And that's how I've had to kind of add things up. I did have my first drink at 15. I did get drunk. I did get sick. I did have a blackout. I did throw up. Mm-hmm. I was horribly embarrassed and remorseful.
Those wouldn't be good signs.
First time.
Yeah, that was the
first
time.
Really got a whole experience.
No, that wouldn't be good. I think you covered most of the early stage symptoms right there.
Right, but what I didn't recognize at the time was as bad as the whole experience was, and I happened to be out of town. I was acting as a nanny for a family that I used to babysit for, and they took me to Michigan with them. And they gave me permission to go to this party, which I'm sure they didn't know was in Chaperone. I didn't know was in Chaperone, but, you know, I was handed a glass about that big full of dark red wine and sweet, and I, you know, it just tasted really good, and that warm feeling, and all of a sudden I'm relaxed and I'm not at all shy with these people that I don't know, kids my own age.
Mm-hmm.
And but the whole experience was so embarrassing that night when I went home to this family's place, summer place, and throwing up, and they have to clean up after me because I couldn't do it, and horrible hangover. And the next day, I remember thinking, I'll never drink Mulligan David wine again.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, someone who wasn't an alcoholic would probably say, oh, that was a horrible experience. I'll never drink again. But I'm just already...
separating it out by brand.
It must have been the Mulligan David.
Yeah, well, that's the first thing I thought. It was,
right.
Oh, that's terrible stuff. Anybody would get sick on that. You'd have to have something respectable to drink. You'd be fine.
Right.
So Well, one of the questions that I had in the hopper for you was to talk a little bit about how it progressed.
Mm-hmm.
So how your drinking progressed, but let's just say you kind of were one of those that kind of got a running start. You were, yeah.
Well, I was in high school, obviously.
Yeah.
If I was 15,
yeah.
There was no just rush to, oh, this is the answer. I just realized that was the answer for me, and pretty soon I'd be 18 and I'd be legal to drink, and my parents would be fine with it. And, you know, it wasn't like I have to do this every
right.
night right away.
Right.
I just knew it was in my future. That's all.
Yeah, it was pretty much locked in. Did the people that you were nannying for after that first experience, did they know that you had been drinking and that's why you were sick?
Yes, they
yeah.
knew. And I was trying to think about, you know, if they told my parents or if they ever asked me to babysit for them again. I can't remember any of it.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, sorry, it was a blackout.
Kind of blanked that out.
Yeah,
Do you remember your parents ever getting mad at you for drinking?
No, never.
Did they ever know that you were drinking?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I wasn't a regular drinker through the rest of high school.
Mm-hmm.
It was just, okay. And I was the last one of three good close friends who turned 18. And at that time, the drinking age was 18 for girls and
mm-hmm.
21 for boys. Is that odd?
That is odd. Was
yeah.
that here in this state?
Illinois, yeah. That was in 19.
We've always been a little bit odd
yeah.
here. But I didn't know that. I know they switched. I know they made the 18 again sometime maybe, I don't know, 20 years ago or so for a couple years, and then it went back to 21.
Yeah.
But I didn't know. 18 for girls,
mm-hmm.
21 for guys.
That's right.
What was the logic for that, you know?
I guess they thought girls were more mature.
Huh.
Aren't we?
Yeah.
But anyway, I was the last of three friends.
We could ask more questions about that, but we won't. We'll just leave that alone. Okay.
And so anyway, with my parents' blessing, I borrowed the car, and the three of us went out for dinner, and I had ordered, you know, my first legal drink, whiskey sour.
Whiskey sour.
Mm-hmm.
And you had just one.
I don't remember. Probably not.
See, once again, I'm searching for symptoms here, but,
yeah.
you know, looking for loss of control and that kind of thing. But anyway, what you're saying is that at least for a period of time, like when you were in high school and up till the time you were 18, you weren't drinking every day, even
no.
though you might not have had a normal attitude about drinking.
Right.
Your drinking hadn't really gotten the rest of the way out of control.
Right. No. There was just never any off button for me from
yeah.
the very start. You know, once I drank, I would keep drinking until I either got drunk, passed out, sick, you know.
Or it was gone.
It was
yeah.
gone, right, mm-hmm. right.
Yeah. Okay, so take us from there, from the point at which, you know, from your 18th birthday, What happens now? What do you do, and what's happening in your life, and what's your drinking like?
Well, I was pretty much daily. I moved away from home after I graduated from high school, and
Where'd you go?
I got a job in Chicago
mm-hmm.
at an advertising agency,
mm-hmm.
Needham, Lewis & Borby, and that was 1957, I think, and you know, the three martini lunch and everything.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I did that too. I was in the mailroom, but I was in advertising. No, I wasn't an executive.
And because you were, right, more mature, you could have three martini lunch.
Yeah. Well, everybody did. Everybody drank it
at
lunchtime then, yeah.
Isn't there a show out now called Ad Men?
I think I've not really seen it. No.
Is that out there? Do you know it? I think it's called, yeah.
Sure, Mad Men. Yeah. It's
Mad
about,
Men.
It's about advertising
right.
execs. During
and it's
the
period. About that time period?
Yeah.
Right.
Like the
and
50s?
Yes, I have seen the clothes that they wore.
And it's good.
Yeah,
so that's what you were doing at that time?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And how did that go for you?
Well, I was enjoying my life, I thought. But at that time, I stopped going to church. I had been baptized Catholic, and my dad was atheist or agnostic. I'm not really sure. My mom was a lapsed Catholic.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was, you know, they sent my sister and I to church and to parochial school. And so, but they didn't go to church. They just sent us and they stayed in bed and read the paper on Sunday. And so when I left home, I thought, well, I'm not going to go to church. Why should I go to church?
Yeah, no, they didn't. Yeah,
they didn't go. So, and I really honestly didn't get anything out of it. And so, and actually, I kind of did it as a test. I thought, if there's really something to this, lightning's going to strike if I turn away from the
church.
Bad
things are going to happen.
Bad things will happen. And they didn't, so life goes on and everything, you know. So I really had no kind of spirituality or connection whatsoever.
So you kind of left God in the dust about then.
Absolutely. Went on about my life and things. My drinking, I've described it as the Chinese water torture type. You know, some people do drugs and alcohol and life in the fast lane, you know,
right,
sort of thing. And when I got sober, there was a gal in my home group. She was 22 and she'd been sober 5 years already.
Holy cow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And by the time I got sober, I was going on my 54th birthday. So my alcoholism just kept coming. It just, you know.
Relentless.
Relentless.
A drop at a time. Well, maybe a little bit more than a drop at a time. But.
Well, and I married a man who was my drinking partner, and I think he functioned better than I did, you know, when we were drinking. So that made it easier for me to keep going too.
What did the three martini lunch lead you to?
Well,
I mean,
very slow afternoon at work, I gotta say.
Yeah.
But everybody was kind of on that same thing. I never got in trouble because of it.
No, I think that was just the way it was.
It was.
Did you have cocktails after when you got home?
I usually had would meet somebody after work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you ever heard the phrase cocktailing?
Yeah.
I never heard that before. Somebody told me about that. I always chuckle. I never knew that cocktail could be a verb.
Oh.
You know, but anyway.
I didn't use it, but I have heard it.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah. So I always wanted to just. Oh, are you going cocktailing? I just wanted to say that, you know.
No.
Anyway, so you would have a cocktail. You
a couple drinks afterwards.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So really, when you think about it, I mean, you like a couple cocktails after work, and you had a three martini lunch. You know, so you've had five drinks since noon.
Yeah, right.
That's
yeah.
Just the way I'm counting. Right. I don't know.
Well, I've mentioned that. I was enjoying my life, I thought. I thought it was very sophisticated. I smoked. I had martinis. I worked for an advertising agency. You know, it doesn't get any more
sophisticated.
Yeah, it does. But when I was 19, I got a strep throat. And because I was away from home and our family doctor, I had to go with a new doctor and filling out forms. I remember lying about, I mean, they always ask, do you drink alcohol? How much and how often? And I remember lying on it. I thought, because whatever they think is normal isn't normal.
Oh, I see.
You know.
Yeah, like they're going to think
they
that.
They don't know.
If I said three drinks, they're going to tell me that's too much, right?
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I don't know. Somewhere deep down in there, I knew whatever I was drinking was more than what was considered normal.
Something wasn't right.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. So when did the 10-year fight begin? I mean, we're jumping ahead probably pretty far. So maybe
that's okay.
Yeah.
That's okay. That happened. It was November of 1983. I was active as a volunteer for an organization, you know, fundraising, and we had a function, and I got very, very drunk, and there was a woman there that I admired a lot and had a lot of respect for her. And I just was way over the top, and I probably fell. I don't remember it all, but I just remember looking up and seeing the look in her face, looking at me, and how disgusted she was, and just repulsed, whatever. And I just thought, the only way that I can figure out to not get drunk like this is to not drink.
And that's where the fight started.
That's where the fight really started. And
do you remember ever seeing a look like that before?
No. Maybe I got them, but that
was the first one you really recognized.
That was the first one I recognized. Yeah.
It got to you.
Yeah. And
did you see any since from that time forward?
Oh, there might have been. I don't know, but that one was the one that got you. Yeah, I didn't even know her that well. I had a lot of respect for her. I thought she was a really nice person, and she just was the opposite of me.
Yeah.
And
that's what you thought.
That's what I thought.
Yeah. Yeah. Did anyone along the way between the time that you know, the three martini time and the disgusted look time, did anybody ever say anything to you about your drinking? Or did your kids? You had kids.
We had kids, yeah. And I taught them very well. We would serve them a little glass of wine when we had dinner. I'm not too proud of that. They've all had their issues. I don't take responsibility for them being, if they are alcoholics or drug addicts, because they're 51 and 49, so they're making their own decisions, but I certainly was not setting a good example for them all those years.
And did they never said anything to you, or they didn't know that the Chinese water torture was going on?
No, they used to go out drinking beer with Mom.
Did they?
Yeah.
So it was kind of, in a way, it was like your family of origin. It was just a normal, natural thing.
Yeah, right, yes. My dad now, back in the late 70s, my dad, he eventually died an alcoholic, in 1995. But he and my mom had separated for a short time, and in order for him to be able to move back in, my mother insisted that he go to treatment. And that was so he went to Lutheran General. And, he really, it didn't stick, of course. It wasn't his idea. And
he just said to get back in the house.
But I knew during that period of time that because we went for family night and all that stuff, how my husband viewed alcoholism and recovery and AA, and he it just did not feel like there was is such a thing as an alcoholic. You just, if you have a problem with drinking, you just stop.
Stop, and then you don't have a problem.
Yeah, right.
Right.
So when I, up to 1990 or 83 there, when I realized that I just had to do something different because my husband, as I said, we were drinking partners. We played hard. And so this was my kind of secret battle.
Yeah, because if you stop drinking, that's going to throw a monkey wrench into this
right.
deal.
But I did stop.
Mm-hmm.
And
that took some courage.
Well, I had such a horrible hangover from this one party that it wasn't too hard to not drink for a couple of days. And so I had decided, you know, still feeling so horrible from that night, remembering the look in that woman's eyes. And so my husband and I were, you know, weight conscious. And so I said I wasn't drinking because I was dieting. And that was, he accepted that. And so I didn't drink for almost 3 years.
Hmm.
But when I initially said, you know, the only way that I can not act like this is to not drink, it just zoomed through my head like one of those little newsreel things,
mm-hmm.
you know, go to AA. And oh. and then I thought, no, I can do this. So that was the last, you know, that I thought yeah. of AA. So anyway, almost 3 years later, and I was a very unhappy camper. I was angry. Miserable, resentful, because I tried to just continue with my same lifestyle with my husband, with him drinking and me not, and and with the same friends, the same playgrounds, and it just
it wasn't fun.
But as I said, this is my own little secret war. And
did he think you were dieting for 3 years?
Oh, I don't think it mattered to him after a while. You know,
it just became.
Yeah,
that's right. What Karen's doing.
That's right.
Yeah.
And so.
Did you lose any weight?
Yes and no.
You know, just
saying. Up and down.
All right. Well, you know what we'll do? I think what we'll do is, if you're okay with this, maybe we'll take a little break, and Chris is going to introduce the music. We'll take about whatever we got, and then we'll come back, and I think maybe we'll talk about sort of, we'll pick it up from there and move into the recovery side and have you talk about how that works.
Okay,
is that all right?
That's right.
All right, what do we got, Chris?
Thank you for listening so far to Recovery Internet Radio. It's been a great conversation, you guys. I appreciate that. We're going to listen to Ahmad Jamal.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that this particular track is called Suicide is Painless,
mm-hmm.
which I'm not so sure about. But
the yeah, theme from MASH.
There you go. I think, yeah, a lot of people would probably find this familiar, but this is a good one. So enjoy the music, and we'll be back with you in about 5. Welcome back to Recovery Internet Radio. Hope you enjoyed the music. We're going to get right back to our conversation here with Karen. Things have been going great so far, and if you're just joining us, you can check us out anytime at recoveryinternetradio.com. Link to the show and our phone number if you'd like to give us a call, of course, is 323-792-2977. You can tweet live. We can answer your questions on the air at Rick Atwater on Twitter or on Facebook at Recovery Internet Radio. Let's get back to it.
Let's get back to it. Thank you, Chris. So I think where we left off was you had decided that you were going to not drink, and you had done that for 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
And you had told your husband you're going on a diet, and then
it was a really long, long
and, but you were miserable and unhappy. I think that's where we got to.
Yeah.
And then, so what happened as the result of miserable and unhappy?
Well, I was going to Europe with my parents on a trip, and France was part of the itinerary, and I thought. Well, I have proved to myself that I don't have a drinking problem, and if anybody goes to France and doesn't drink wine, that they must be crazy. So anyway, I got on the airplane. My parents and I were sitting waiting for the plane to taxi, and was offered a drink. Oh, yes, thank you. Just like that.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't look back, and drank most of my way over to France, and we had a very nice trip. Actually, we were joining up with my dad's older brother, who helped start an AA meeting in Portugal. And so we were going to go to France and Spain and meet my Uncle Walter and Portugal, and then he was going to travel by train with us back to Paris. So anyway, drinking all the way, except Uncle Walter. He was just smiling at the rest of us the whole time. But he died a couple years ago, the age of 90, after 45 years of sobriety in AA. So
that's hard.
Yeah, he was a great example. But anyway, just come over most of the trip.
Yeah. And so when you got back, then was it business as usual then with the drinking?
Absolutely.
I've heard some people say like you kind of tend to pick up pretty much where you left off with the drinking, or maybe even a little bit further along.
Right.
Is that true?
As to my experience, yes. I think even though that 3 years that I wasn't drinking, my alcoholism was progressing that whole time. And I had a whole lot less tolerance once I started again. And then I just had to figure out ways to control it. I knew I was going to keep on drinking, but I just have to control it better, and not just drink all out like I always had. And I got a whole list of things.
Good.
And in the big book, in the third chapter, they have a paragraph that lists all different things people have tried. I've tried a lot of those, and abstinence was the first one. That 3 years.
Try quitting.
And then limiting the number of drinks, and sometimes it worked.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the time it didn't. Not drinking in the morning. That proves that you're an alcoholic if you drink in the morning.
Mm.
And besides,
does that count even if you work nights?
Yes, it does. Mm-hmm. Yes, it
okay,
does.
I was just thinking.
Yes. Yeah, I know.
Okay. I'm trying to shoot an angle is what I'm doing.
But my dad, I've seen him so many times trying to gag down a drink in the morning, and he'd keep throwing it up until he got one to stay down, and I just thought, that's never going to be me. And so I never drank in the morning because of that, but that has nothing to do with deciding whether you're an alcoholic or not. I know I'm an alcoholic, but I never drank in the morning. So there.
Okay, so we're clear on that, right?
Yeah. And self-help books, I kept looking for the answer. There must have been something. I knew, you know, I was looking for an answer, something I was missing. It must be in one of those books, mm-hmm. and never could find it. And I'd avoid certain people because certain people were more fun than other people, and so that meant they were trouble. And if I was with them, I was going to get in trouble too. So
you had to avoid the fun ones.
Yeah, sometimes. Oh. You know, yeah. I didn't always.
Yeah.
But, mm-hmm. but
how about brands? Did you switch brands or?
No, I started eliminating different hard liquors one by one. You know. Gin, vodka, scotch. Scotch was one of the first ones. Actually, that was back when I was still at home. And I went to a party with my parents, and it was an Labor Day party. And the weather turned freezing cold. And so somebody said, here, have some scotch. That'll warm you up. And I just got violently ill and never had scotch again. So...
that's off the
and
table.
Tequila and mm-hmm. the on and mm-hmm. on and on. So
those all got crossed off.
All
the list,
those got crossed.
That's not the one.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And as I mentioned, my tolerance got lower and lower, and so I switched to just either beer or wine, and because I wanted to last a little longer, because if I went to a party and had a martini or something, 10 minutes later I'd be on the couch. I'd curl up somewhere. I didn't want to do that. So I was able to last a little longer mm-hmm. by drinking something not so potent.
You know, it's interesting that some people would have a hard time understanding that concept, that when if you've stopped drinking for a period of time and then you start again, that the disease progresses whether you're drinking or not.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But you're saying that was your experience.
That's
that
right.
Your tolerance was lower when you started drinking again.
That's exactly
and it never,
right.
And it never, you know, like when you first start drinking, you build your tolerance up.
Mm-hmm.
That didn't happen when you started again.
No.
Mm-hmm. See, and that's, you know, that's just pretty... symptomatic, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So what was the final, what was the straw that broke the camel's back? What happened when you finally needed to get some help?
Well, the remainder of this 10 years, the abstinence for 3 years and then the 7 years of trying to control, my husband and I, would go out for dinner quite often. And I had figured out, I thought, that I could have one bottle of wine. I wouldn't be, you know, make a fool of myself, and I wouldn't have a hangover the next day. So when we'd sit down at the table, my husband would order a martini or something else, and I would have this bottle of wine. I usually got champagne because, mm-hmm. you know, that's nicer.
It's sophisticated.
And, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And you can't be an alcoholic if you're drinking champagne. So anyway, all baloney.
Right.
And so if one night he would say, I think I'll just have a glass of that wine first. As I said, this is all this war going on in my head. He doesn't know anything about me trying to control.
And he's drinking a glass of your champagne?
That's what I said. You're drinking my champagne. Well,
You're not saying it, but that's what you're thinking,
exactly.
Right? And that's one less
yeah.
glass for
right.
me.
Well, I thought, damn, now I've got to order another bottle. And we finished dinner and the check is coming, and I feel like, okay, we're going to make it, you know. And then somebody we know would walk into the restaurant and, you know, now we got to have another drink with them. Now I got to have another bottle. I mean, it's so ridiculous to me now to think, you know, I have to have that. There's no other way. There's no other answer except, you know, and once the bottle is open, it has to be finished. So anyway, my husband is becoming the enemy because I'm thinking he's, if he offers me, would you like another drink or something? I'm thinking he's trying to sabotage me. And so, you know, over year after year, I'm looking for someone else to blame besides myself. And so he becomes the bad guy. And so our marriage was getting pretty rough. And this one night we were scheduled to go out for dinner with some friends, one other couple, good friends. And they were, of all the people we knew, they were not really heavy drinkers. But at the last minute, my husband's schedule was changed. And so since they were really good friends, the three of us decided we'd go anyway. And we drank. And, you know, we're ready to go. And I said, oh, no, let's have another bottle. And I spoke to both of them the next day. And this guy, he's a workaholic. He always even works Sundays. He didn't go to work that day. And my friend, his wife, she said, I feel so sick. And I had never seen her drunk the whole time that we'd been friends. And it's then that I thought, you know, it's not Jack, it's me. It's been me all along. I've been blaming him. Thinking if I wasn't married to him, I wouldn't have a problem. And I was standing in my kitchen this Sunday morning and thought, I just can't do this anymore. And I realized that I was my problem. And I went into the drawer and got the telephone book and called AA. That was that. Mm-hmm. And
did somebody come out, or did they tell you where a meeting was, or how did that work?
Well, I talked. I didn't want anybody in Crystal Lake to see me at a meeting, which is so funny because, you know, I'd stagger around any restaurant in Crystal Lake. Didn't worry about that a bit, but I didn't want them to see me at an AA meeting. So this woman was on the phone. She talked to me for, I would guess, 2.5 hours we talked. Mm. And she really kind of told her story. She became my first sponsor, as it turned out, temporary sponsor. Mm. And so this was a Sunday morning, and she said, she's looking at a schedule, trying to figure out where I could go. And she said, well, Tuesday there's a meeting at Burton's Bridge at 10:30. So she said, I will have someone meet you there. She said, I'm working at that hour, but I'll have somebody meet you there. And I couldn't wait for that Tuesday morning to come. I was so ready. I just wanted to go. And I had no idea what I was getting in for. It didn't matter. I was finished.
Yeah.
That was all. I'd done it.
And so what did happen?
I went to the meeting, didn't understand anything that went on. They have the steps written on the wall there, and it just looked like another language or something to me. But and people were smiling and happy, and I thought, don't they know how serious this is? I couldn't get, you know, what are they laughing about? This is, you know, so anyway.
This is life and death here.
Exactly. Well, that's
And it is.
But anyway, yes, I began my recovery. And the interesting part to me, that 3 years that I didn't drink, or I was dry, or whatever you want to call it. When I started drinking again, I was, you know, the same person, but my disease had progressed. But the difference is I had not learned a thing. You know, I didn't go to AA, and that was a choice that I made. I figured I could do it by myself, but I didn't learn a thing. And once I started going to meetings, and even though I didn't understand it all at first, I realized that I needed to be changed. I needed, and here was a plan. So easy, you know, just follow these steps. And it is easy, simple, I should say, but major life changes for me.
Can you, one of the questions I had sort of plugged in here was, what were some of the cornerstone events in your recovery along the way? Like, what would you say were some of the things that kind of, I don't know, cemented your changes or highlighted your changes along the way?
Well, very early on, I was really struck by the way I was welcomed, you know, and the way people remembered me when I went to another meeting and were friendly, and I was suspicious, I would say. But
what did you think, that they like wanted money or something?
What? Yeah.
And well, why would
they cast
like
the basket, and yeah. I thought, aha, this is a cult. You know, just like I always thought, you know. But the first couple of months, I was going to meetings out of town, and I went to one in Wakanda. There was a woman there. It was a four-step meeting, and, of course, I wasn't on the fourth step. And she had come in about the same time that I had. And so we had, you know, like 2 months of sobriety. So it's going around the table, and everybody's commenting about the fourth step, and it came to me, and I blah, 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 whatever I said, it meant to me. And it got around to her, and she just glared at me across the table like that, and she said, I'm not on the fourth step, and my sponsor said, if I'm not on that step, I should shut up and listen. And so, of course, I didn't like her. She was this real toughy, and the meeting breaks up, and I actually had my hand on the door, might have even walked through the door, and I heard her say, asking for a ride. She needed a ride because she didn't have a car. She lost her license. And I'm thinking how she irritated me, and I didn't like this woman, just, you know, like that. And I turned around and went back and offered her a ride. And I thought, who did that? That wasn't me that did that.
Something changed.
Yes, something had already started to change. I'd seen, you know, how giving other people were, and I just thought, this is the right thing to do. And so here's a woman that, you know, neither one of us would probably want to have anything to do with the other at any given time. And we became good friends. We went to a lot of meetings together. We went to a conference. The very first conference I ever went to was down near O'Hare, and we were roommates for that. So
that's a marker for a pretty big change.
Mm-hmm.
You've been through a lot of stuff in your sobriety, and I know you just with the, you know, fairly recently, you lost a son.
Yeah, that's right. Our oldest son.
Yeah.
He died in April 15th. He was in Hawaii, and he fell. We don't know the details. I do know that he was diagnosed as bipolar when he was in his 30s, and he disagreed, and so he never was treated. You know, he was a really great guy. We were close, and spiritually, I guess. He lived in Seattle for many, many years.
Mm-hmm.
It was a big loss for us. But I've read quite a few books and have a lot of friends who helped me through that period, and AA,
mm-hmm.
especially close friends in AA, were very supportive, are still, and I just I now have a belief in a higher power, a God I call God, and I came back to that. Once I got sober, it was what I'd been missing for so long. And I'm losing Jeff on, that he's no longer walking on this earth. It's just not as painful as I imagined it would ever be. I thought I couldn't survive something like that. But I know, because of the faith I have now, I feel like he still exists, and he's loved, and he's happy, and I'll see him again. So.
And one of the reasons that I asked you that is because I think that a lot of people would think in the back of their minds, well, if this happens, I'm going to have to drink. And you didn't do that.
No, I didn't do that. And you know, meeting people through the years that I've been sober, I've heard some people say from time to time, that if some tragedy, certain tragedy happened in their life, that's the first thing they do, or, if they were diagnosed as terminal, they go out and drink and smoke. But I love being sober. I love living a sober life. And I just, that feeling of losing touch that you get with just taking that first drink of alcohol is not a place I want to be anymore. I really love being conscious and alive. And I often say I'd like to be the poster child for senior women. life is fun.
You're pretty happy.
I am a happy person. Very happy. Really happier than I ever.
And who would have guessed it, huh?
Right.
Who would have guessed it?
Right.
If we had, if we have a listener out there who is thinking about, thinking about their drinking and whether or not they should do something about it. Is there anything that you would like to tell them? Is there anything that, any piece of wisdom or advice or experience that you'd like to pass to them? Because we never know who's listening. It's internet radio, and it could be anybody, anywhere. And we'd like to think that people out there who are listening maybe are people that might be interested in this particular topic. So what would you tell them?
Well, I can only say that I am becoming the person that I've always wanted to be. And prior to getting sober, my life was just a lie. I wanted to be have certain characteristics, to be reliable and punctual and caring and loving and kind, and but I couldn't pull it off because every time, you know, drinking just was an everyday thing. And once I drank, that's what I did. I drank, you know, yeah. And I've taken up different hobbies. My friend sitting over there and I are beaders now and make jewelry. And I've challenged myself. I read an article early in sobriety written by a woman who said, you know, try something, you know, challenge yourself. If you don't like it, you don't have to keep doing it, you know. And I, at this time, she was talking about ocean kayaking. And as it turned out, she did like it and stuck with it. But I tried that, and I do like kayaking. I tried scuba diving, and I made 3 40-foot dives, and I don't like that. And it's okay. I you know, it's okay for me to not become an expert at something. But I feel like my life is genuine now, and that, you know, we're in our AA program. You know, it says, you know, we will not regret the past, and I know it. Why regret it? Because you can't change it anyway. But I remember when my kids were in Little League, and we lived right near the Little League field, and I was just bored out of my mind. The game was going on and on and on, and so I thought, I'm just going to slip home and have a beer and come back. And I did. I don't know how long I was gone, probably longer than I had planned, but I came back. The game was stopped, and there's this crowd. And as I got closer, there's a little boy on the ground, and it's my son. And all these other mothers are attending to my son because he got hit in the head with a baseball. And I didn't quit drinking right then, but that was one of those moments that brought me closer to my bottom and made me realize that's not the kind of person I want to be. I want to be responsible, loving, caring, reliable, and, you know, having a beer in the middle of a Little League game is not that.
Probably not. No. And so I guess what the message is that that your sobriety has allowed you to be who you've always wanted to be.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's a great message and a great story. And I really appreciate you telling it and being here tonight to give us that message and tell us about yourself and pass that along. So it was it was a great story, and I appreciate it. Thank you for coming.
Thank you.
Thank you, Karen.
Thank you.
Thank you to our listeners and to our studio audience for making us a successful little underground support source for the recovering community. We'll email our reminders for next week's show. If you want to be on the list, go to
recoveryinternetradio.com. It's a great email. It's just a nice reminder every week. It's got a direct link to the show, and you know, sign up, and even if it's not your thing that week, pass it on to somebody you know.
Yeah, we hope that if you get that message, you'll pass it along to those who could use it or would enjoy it. So we also want to hear from you. So if you go to the website, you can sign up for that, and then we'll know where you are or where you're coming from. That would be a nice thing too. So, again, thank you. And as always, live today, love yourself and your neighbor. Together we'll trudge the happy road to destiny. We hope you've enjoyed the show, and we'll see you at 8 p.m. next Sunday night.
Okay.
Bingo.